Welcome to the Shine in Sales podcast, presented by Sales Women Train, India's first and only community inspiring women to succeed at selling. I'm Chitra Singh, your host, and also the chief mentor and founder of Sales Women Train.
I'm really very excited to be talking to Jen Allen. Jen is Chief Evangelist at Challenger Inc. She is a keynote speaker and she is also host of a wildly popular podcast series called Winning the Challenger Sale. Welcome, Jen. And with your permission, let's dive straight into the questions. Are we ready?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk with you today.
Yes, let's get on with the questions. So the first question I have for you, Jen, is how was Jen as a young girl, as a child? And what did you like doing as a child? What finally led you towards choosing sales as a career? Or did sales choose you or happen to you by default, like it happened to a lot of us?
Yeah, it's funny. It's rare you meet people that are like, I knew as a little kid I wanted to be in sales. They're out there, but few and far between. So for me, when I was a kid, I really loved being involved in plays and musicals and music in general, and performing. And when I was really little, I always had aspirations of going on like Saturday Night Live and, you know, being an improv actor or something like that. And as I went to college, then it sort of shifted and I thought maybe, hey, I love writing. Maybe journalism is a good career track for me. So I spent, you know, my first year of college studying journalism and then quickly realized, I don't think I have the chops to throw a microphone in someone's face when something bad is happening. And so really I fell into sales, not because I ever thought I would be great at sales or I wanted to do sales, but rather because I had a college roommate who was working at CEB, which is where I started back in 04 at the time. And she said, Jen, you know, what an awesome place this is. Really smart people, really fun people, great atmosphere to learn. Check it out. And I did. I actually applied for the event management role and they put me in account management. And that's how I got started. It was not by any way, shape, or form a belief system that like I was made to do sales.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of us just fall into sales and sales happens to us. But it was a lucky coincidence, right? And a great choice if you look at it now.
Yeah. And I was really lucky, candidly, to have my first manager. I always say this, it was probably largely due to her that I stuck it out in sales because I just thought she was incredible. And I admired her so much, her poise, her posture, her command of a room. And I just remember being so drawn to that and saying, I would love to kind of grow up and be like her one day. So I was really lucky to have a great manager from the start.
Right. Actually, the role of a manager or a mentor early on in your career, it's really, really important. I had one like that too, who always told me that failure is not final. And there is success waiting just around the corner. And that is why I think I stuck with sales too. So let's come to the next question, which is that you've challenged several stereotypes. You've been a woman in sales. You're a sales leader. You're chief evangelist, a very interesting role, I must say. You're also a dog lover. I can see your pet in the background, your hands-on parent. You did talk about your children in some of your podcasts. So how do you manage to do so many roles so effortlessly? Is it really effortless, or do you also have to prioritize and somehow navigate around the challenges like a whole lot of us?
Yeah, for those that are listening, obviously you can't see us on video when you said, is it really effortless? My face absolutely dropped because I never want people to believe that I think it's effortless, right? I think for me, it was an interesting path because I am 40 and I met my now fiance a few years ago and he has four children. I had two dogs. He also has a dog, right? And so being a single woman living by myself, you know, work was primarily my big priority. I would give 100% of myself to work from Monday through Friday. On the weekends, I'd have a lot of fun and then I'd come back and do it all over again. And so when I got into a relationship with my fiance, Nick, it changed everything, right? Because now all of a sudden there's a 7-year-old, a 9-year-old, a 14-year-old, an 18-year-old, and there's competition for my time. And I candidly struggled with it for a really long time because I struggled to break free of that. Like work is my Monday through Friday priority. And I think the most fabulous thing about having children come into my life is that they kind of force you to break that, right? It's not like I had this, you know, evolution and I said, oh, you know, I need to become more healthy in my work-life balance. It would be Lucia or Nikki busting in the door saying, hey, we're home from school. We want to tell you about it. And so for me, it was a really tricky thing to handle because there's not necessarily kind of a guidebook. And it wasn't like, you know, I had them as my own babies and then it evolved and grew. It was just all of a sudden there were children in my life. So for me, it's been a huge blessing because I think it's forced my hand to have a better work-life balance. But do I struggle with it? All the time. I hate when I'm on a call and I feel like I can't, you know, acknowledge the kids coming in. But what I've come to learn, and you mentioned this in a post today, is that I think we've really just come into this environment where people are far more comfortable with just being human instead of trying to be something we're not, or professional, or the kids aren't here, just embracing it. And I think I've honestly had some really cool conversations off the back of, you know, one of the kids walking in and someone being like, who's that? What are they about? So I think it's definitely changing in terms of the professional landscape.
Yes. I think this whole work from home has a kind of blurred the boundaries between work and home. Earlier, I couldn't imagine as a branch head in a bank, I had to look serious, be serious, look professional. And we think if we have to look professional and act serious at work, we can't have children or dogs coming in and interrupting the conversations. But now it's become part of our normal work life. And that's the best thing about work from home. And like you rightly said, I think none of us can be perfect. We've just got to learn every single day and do the best we can.
Absolutely. And we're going to mess it up and that's okay because we're all human.
Sometimes we are all a mess, but I think we need to pick ourselves up. And that brings me to the next question, which is very, very relevant to all salespeople because most salespeople, in fact, all of us face rejection and failure on a daily basis. And sales is more about rejections and objections rather than winning and successes. And how does one as a salesperson and how do you specifically get the energy and the enthusiasm and the passion back after facing rejection and failure on a daily basis? How do you get back to work with the same energy and enthusiasm? Would you share that with our listeners?
Oh my gosh. So there's a couple things here. So one is I personally believe it is so important to have conviction in what you're selling, because when you really believe and have a fire for what you're talking about, you know, every Monday through Friday, it does become a lot easier to navigate the highs and lows. So I think anybody who's listening, if you are constantly finding yourself just in such a deep, dark place because of rejection, I would revisit, you know, what is my fire for selling what I sell? I personally, again, this is just my independent belief. I just cannot imagine selling a product or a service that did not get me fired up every day. So one is just making sure you're in alignment with what you're selling. Two is making sure you're in alignment with who you're selling for. So I will say some of my lowest lows, some of my like big, big deals that, you know, you got to the final mile and then something happened and it blew up. My ability to actually manage those highs and lows was largely impacted by the person I was working for and the people I was working with. So having a manager who is not the person to kind of beat you over the head in that moment and tell you, well, what you should have done is this, is so essential to navigating that. And then also having a team where you can be vulnerable. I am so blessed to have a team where we talk openly about when we lose, why we lose, what we will learn from it, what we do differently. And I think those things together really just create sort of a safe space to fail and learn from it. Because, you know, I think we all can agree that some of our best learnings come from our worst mistakes. And so having a safe space to do that, I think, is really important.
Failure teaches you more than success ever can. And if you reflect on your failures, I think you learn more than you will learn from your successes. Not many people admit to their failures and not many people talk about it. But you did talk about a lot of things, including having a supportive team around you, having a mentor who encourages you and actually holds you or catches you when you fail or fall. All these things are really, really important. And you also talked about alignment with your value system, which is what I also believe in. That if you know your why are you selling? Why are you in this profession? To help people, to make a difference, to change the world. We are evangelists in that sense because we are out here to change the world. And I do believe that sales is an opportunity to change the world one customer at a time. So every single day we are out there changing the world, changing the customer's perspectives and helping them to discover something new and something fresh. Which brings me to the next question. You have talked about evangelism. Very interesting term. And you're also, of course, your role is that of a chief evangelist. So why did you choose that word? And how did that happen? And tell us more about that.
Yeah, I know. It's a really odd title. I don't love the title, to be honest, but we're rolling with it. So essentially what happened is March of 2021, it was the end of the first quarter for us. What I noticed is that our inbound lead flow seemed to have kind of fallen off a cliff. Now, in the past, and I think many organizations fall into this trap, when that happens, what do? We go to marketing, we beat them over the head and say, we need more leads, we need more MQLs, we need more SQLs, right? And it's just this systemic problem where we just keep finger pointing. When at the end of the day, it was my quota that, you know, my paycheck. So I had this moment where I realized, like, I can't keep looking to someone else to solve problems that are impacting me. And so I had been using LinkedIn for a while just as a prospecting tool, candidly. And I started to notice that some of the people I were following or seeing in my feed were showing up just wildly different than I'd ever seen before. They were teaching, they were vulnerable about things they got wrong. And I was just really drawn to it. And so I started writing more on LinkedIn. And at the same time, our company had started doing a monthly webinar and a monthly podcast. And I started listening to that. And what I realized in the course of doing it is two things. One, sales comes in so many different forms. Like, I've done account management, hunting, large enterprise, like, you know, smaller transactions, larger transactions. There's always really interesting ways to make sales different for, you know, for each of us. But what I was drawn to is that early part of the sale, like getting someone to think differently about their own business, their problems, what they should do about it. It's not to say that closing a deal doesn't still, you know, get me excited, but I was drawn to that early part. And the second thing that I noticed is I was starting to get very senior sales leaders showing up in my DMs on LinkedIn being like, hey, I saw you posted this. I've always been really curious about Challenger, but never checked it out. And so after it happened a couple of times, I just asked the person and I was like, why? Just out of curiosity, like, why'd you come to me instead of going to our website and just filling out a form? And what they said was, because I feel like I know you. Like, I feel like I know what you stand for, what your perspective on sales is. And so I feel confident that if I spend time with you, it's going to be a rewarding conversation. And I said, well, what would be like, what's your fear of filling out a lead form? And they said, because I have no idea who's going to take that lead. And are they going to be aggressive and put me into a sales cycle? I'm just trying to learn right now. I'm not necessarily ready to buy. So that was really, really invigorating for me. And so essentially I went to our CEO, I did a bunch of research to look at the, you know, role of evangelism. I put together a job description and said, look, I think this could help us actually create more demand in a totally different, more authentic way. Would you be open for it? She said, yes. And here we are.
That's great. In fact, coincidentally, the company which I started, the sales consultancy, it's called Sales Evangelists. So I completely believe. We met here because I completely believe in this. And I do think that we are the pioneers in that sense of showing the world a different way to sell, which brings me to the next question, which is, you've talked about 38% of B2B deals being lost due to the status quo and no decision by the customer. And your challenger approach is all about winning deals and not losing them because of price and no decision or status quo. So how is this approach different from traditional selling methodologies or approaches? And how does it help the salesperson in winning deals?
Yes. So what I will say is for those of you that know the challenger sale, like, I was not someone who was a natural challenger. I was someone, we had these five different profiles we identified in our research. I was far more in the relationship builder camp, meaning I believed that I won deals based on my likability, my accessibility, my willingness to do anything for the customer, be a servant to the customer, right? And candidly, that worked for a really long time until 08 came around. And you probably remember, it was such a shakedown. And so at the same time, Challenger came out. And so at its core, what Challenger teaches and what makes it a different type of approach is, instead of trying to convince a customer why our solution is better than their status quo, what Challenger teaches is you have to first and foremost teach someone why status quo is costing them. Because as humans, especially in times like we've been through, all of us, yes, in the last 2 years, we avoid change at all costs. Like, we have all just been through 2 years of forced change. So for me to throw my hand up as a human being and say, you know what, let's implement a new CRM system. It's not going to happen no matter what the benefits are, unless I'm looking at my current approach for, you know, customer relationship management and saying, this is costing us customers. It's costing us, you know, capacity, productivity. We're losing people over the way that the process works. Like, I have to have a belief system that my current state is so much more painful than whatever I change to, because that road to change is hard. I don't care what you sell. It is change. It could be disruptive. Your team might think you're crazy for changing something they liked. Like, it might be expensive, may not work the way you want it. And these are all fears that we have as humans. And so, in a long way of saying, like, challengers teaching sellers, how do you go and attack the status quo before you ever show up and throw up about what you sell and why it's the best?
Right. Yeah, so I think there was a slight pause there.
Oh, sorry. It's okay.
Internet connection was bad. So could you just repeat the last part? I think we'll edit it out because there was a bad internet connection. Just the last few sentences.
Yeah, cool. So what Challenger is about is teaching sellers, how do you go and help a customer realize the cost of their current behavior before you ever walk in and show up and throw up about any of the value of your solutions and services that you offer?
Absolutely. So if you show them what is the gap between their current state and the desired state, I think they will be more willing to buy. In fact, they'll be inspired to buy rather than pushing them towards buying.
Mm-hmm.
By talking about features or benefits, which was the traditional way of selling. This is more like showing the customer a new reality and showing how their whole story will change once they start using your product or service. Absolutely refreshing approach. And I think it has worked for you. It will surely work for many of our listeners. So now, having covered the very serious parts of sales, so many tips, though we've not been so serious, let's go to the fun part. So if not a salesperson, what would you rather be?
Oh, great question. I've actually never been asked that before on a podcast. If I was not a salesperson, and let's say money wasn't an issue, I would absolutely be like a director of a dog rescue shelter. That's my true, true, true passion and the thing I get most lit up about.
So you're obviously a dog person, not a cat person.
I mean, I love all animals, but man, dogs you're have my heart. dogs are my thing.
So is sales your first passion or animals?
Animals, 100% animals, but sales affords me the opportunity to donate and be involved and, you know, be able to contribute in a meaningful way financially to a lot of the shelter programs that I like. So there's a good part to it.
Right. Surely. But if you enjoy what you do, then it's not work anymore. It's your passion, it's your purpose. And obviously it's a way of making money so that you can contribute to the causes which are important to you.
Exactly. Very well said. That's exactly it.
So if you were not selling, you would be more likely to be found in an animal shelter or which other place?
Yeah, I'd be likely to be found in an animal shelter, at a wine bar, hanging out with the kids, biking around. Like, the one thing I will say that is difficult about sales that I think a lot of people can relate to is it is easy to get sucked in, right? There is always someone else you can prospect. There is always another follow-up email you can send. And so going back to what we talked about before, I think having that break and recognizing the work is never done. We just have to be okay with like leaving things to tomorrow, leaving things to the next day. That's always candidly been a bit of a challenge for me. It's something I've been very intentional about working on this year for sure.
Problem is we think we are running on a treadmill. And if we don't keep running, we won't get in leads. And if we don't get in leads, we won't close the sales. So I think all of us need to shut down and recharge ourselves because we all need energy to come back and sell with the same passion and the same energy and the enthusiasm. Selling is all about transfer of enthusiasm and transfer of confidence to the customer, right? So if you are low on energy and enthusiasm when you sell, I'm sure the customer is not going to be energized or inspired to buy?
Absolutely. I took a week off last week because I found myself experiencing all sorts of symptoms of burnout. And look, I love what I do, but it doesn't mean that you don't run into these moments where you get ground down. And I think when we find ourselves seeing something small happening and then reacting like it's, you know, the earth is blowing up, that was a sign for me where I stepped back and I said, I need to just like take some time off and I'm going to explain it. I'm going to help people understand. It is not that I don't think this call, this meeting is important. I just want to give you my best self. And to do that, I need to take a few days, right? And I will tell you, I came back on Monday and it was the best I'd felt in a really, really long time. So the analogy you use of being on a treadmill, I love that because I think that's so true.
Absolutely. And the message which you're giving to all salespeople is that I think we need to recharge, we need to rest, we need to learn how to draw a line between work and other priorities. I wouldn't say life, other priorities. And we need to give enough time to our other priorities so that we come back to work with the same vigor and the same, same ease. So any one thing, one message which you would like to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I think I'll share something that was a core learning to me. So I've been selling for now 18 years. I was never someone who wanted to be like a manager, never wanted to be a people leader. So that's kind of how I found myself in this evangelist track. The message I would say is when I started really getting effective at sales is when I really figured out how to show up like my authentic self. And I know it sounds a little corny and a little cheesy, but I think many of us in sales, when we start or when we get involved, we start trying to model ourselves after someone else that we perceive to be successful. And I did this. There was someone at my first organization I really liked. So I tried to sound like them. I tried to talk like them. I heard, trigger phrases. I would try to use it, but it never felt authentic to me, right? And I was just trying to be someone I was not. And so I remember there was a woman at GE Healthcare who was a client of mine who was the first person to kind of break me. And she said, Jen, you're very smart. You're very articulate, but who are you? Like, what are you about? And it was so scary to me, honestly. I was trying to think of a different word, but it was scary to me because I was like, oh, I'm breaking the facade. But my connection with her after having a true conversation, after showing her like, I do have a sense of humor. Like I do love dogs. Like I do like, some quirky things. We became closer as partners than we would have ever been in this, portrayal of what I thought a good salesperson sounded like. So I think for anybody, I mean, this is not just for early career people. Like I struggled with this for a while, probably up until mid-career. Being who we are is our best competitive differentiator, full stop. And all we are looking for in sales is a competitive differentiator, right? As more products are similar, as people like can play catch up faster, being your authentic self is seriously your best weapon. So experiment in small ways, win those small wins, but the closer and faster you can get to who you truly are, the deeper connection you'll candidly make with your prospects and customers is my personal opinion.
Absolutely right. In fact, we keep talking about unique value proposition and what value the product brings, and we forget what value we add to the sale, right? The salesperson is the one who brings that ultimate, that difference and that rapport and the emotion to the sale. People connect with people and people buy from people they like and trust. And ultimately, it's the person and the human being behind your title and behind all your fancy designations. It's the human being who connects with the other human being at the other end and makes the difference. Really well said. And on this really nice note, we should end this. Thank you so much for coming and talking to us today. It was a real pleasure. And have a great day.
Thank you so much. The pleasure was all mine.
Thank you for listening to the Shine in Sales podcast presented by Sales Momentary. If you liked this episode, do listen to our upcoming episodes where we will interview inspiring sales leaders who will share their tips and strategies for success in sales. Happy selling!